I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to Radio Times. America faces a series of crises that have been simmering for a long time. An incident of police brutality was caught on tape last Monday when Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin put his knee on George Floyd's throat for almost 10 minutes with three officers looking on. Floyd's last words were, "I can't breathe." All four officers were fired, and Chauvin was charged with third-degree murder. In the last week, outraged protesters have taken to the streets across the country demanding justice and an end to racist police practices. And while most of the demonstrators were peaceful, others have taken advantage of the situation to loot, set fires, and vandalize properties. And all of this comes as the pandemic has revealed the systemic and longstanding inequities in our country, the rage and despair felt by so many, with tens of millions of people losing their jobs, and African Americans bearing the brunt of the ravages of the coronavirus. Meanwhile, the stock market continues to rise. Well, today in Radio Times, we want to talk about some of the root causes for these demonstrations. We want to talk about the behavior of the police, some of the political implications, the public's reaction, including yours, and what comes next. Let me introduce our two guests. Kianga Yamada Taylor is an assistant professor of African American Studies at Princeton University. She's got a new book, Race for Profit: How Banks and the Real Estate Industry Undermine Black Home Ownership. Kianga Yamada Taylor, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us, Mark Kelly Tyler. He's pastor of Mother Bethel AME Church, which is in Philadelphia. Also an organizer with POWER, which stands for Philadelphians Organized to Witness, Empower, and Rebuild. And Mark Kelly Tyler, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Yeah, well, thank you. Maybe one day it'll be a good news story, but I'm glad to be here.
We're happy to have you both here. Let me just make sure our listeners can join our conversation. Radio Times at WHYY.org. That's how you can send us an email. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can always call us at 1-888-477-9499. And there is a lot to talk about. I sometimes spend hours trying to figure out what is going to be my first question before I start an interview. And I just couldn't come up with one because it seems like we are witnessing, Kianga, really this country coming apart at the seams. And I wonder what your thoughts are this morning.
Well, I think that what we're seeing is a lot of pent up rage boil over. And it's been pent up, blown up by empty promises, I think, year after year, a constant moving these issues of police brutality, of inequality to the margins. These are people who are typically invisible and who are treated disposably in our society. And when you continue to ignore these types of problems, what you're seeing now is that they will explode. And so I think even just in the demonstration and the reaction to the demonstrations by the police, you see why people are so angry. I think across the country, what we've been witnessing is police-instigated violence. Just yesterday, outside of the White House, police attacked a peaceful gathering of people in Lafayette Park across from the White House with tear gas. And so, of course, people are angry. And if you combine into that the growing levels of unemployment, the lack of opportunity in this country, the abject inequality, meaning rich people getting obscenely rich and poor and working class people stuck to the bottom. And so all of this is boiling over at this moment. And, you know, we are seeing the consequences of it.
Mark Kelly Tyler, even going back to this, you know, this horrifying and tragic incident last Monday, we have all, if you took the time, had a chance to watch what happened to George Floyd, what was done by the police there. And, you know, this is not the first time we've been witness to something that in past generations was not broadcast the way you can with a cell phone.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been thinking that this resonates probably so well with so many black people because so many of us have been in that moment. And, you know, fortunately for us, it did not lead to our death. But, you know, an over-aggressive police officer a stop that just went well beyond, you know, what it should have been, just simply whatever it is you were detained for that moment, whether it's a traffic ticket or whatever, and just how easy it is for something that should be minor to turn into something that you're on the ground with someone with their knee on your neck and they won't get up until you're dead. I mean, it's visceral because even at 53 years old today, I still have to worry about every encounter with law enforcement, and I have to try to manage young white police officers who may stop me for, you know, speeding, or they just, I mean, it may be a legitimate stop, but I have to manage them through that stop to help them understand that even with a graying beard, that I'm not a threat to you. I want you to go home. I want to go home. Just come on, relax, calm down. All of my stuff is together. I should, you know, my white clergy friends don't have that concern. And that is, so again, when I see, you know, that scene, I see how easily that could have been me. And that, it just pains me so deeply.
Because
go ahead, Kiana. Can I just also say that I think the fact that, you know, this wasn't police brutality. This was a lynching. This was police murder. And the fact that the other three cops who were on the scene, not passively watching, but there is a back shot of what was happening while Chauvin had his knee on the throat, on the neck of George Floyd. These, one of these other officers was leaning with his two knees on the back of George Floyd. And so what part of what reaction that we are seeing is the hypocrisy in this country where there are two sets of laws. There are two sets of rules and regulations. So the police can literally kill someone on the street in broad daylight on camera. And only one of them is arrested. Whereas if it were any other citizen, particularly a black citizen, three of them jumping on top of a white man and killing him in the street, they would all be jailed. And so this is the hypocrisy at the center of U.S. society for everyone to see. It's part of what is making people so palpably angry.
And Mark Kelly Tyler, this is on the heels of what we saw, what happened to Ahmaud Arbery, who was a jogger who got shot, Breonna Taylor, Christian Cooper, who was bird watching in Central Park and had a white woman, you know, try to, she didn't try, she called the cops on him. And it seems as if there's just this confluence of events. And again, this has happened before, but do you think, at this point, we are, maybe this is more like white America is beginning to connect some of these dots?
Well, I mean, one would hope so. But again, I'm old enough to know that we've been here before. We've had, I mean, you know, who doesn't, if you're a certain age, you remember living through Rodney King and watching that video, the violent beating of him, that black America said, do you see now what we've been talking about? You know, cities burned when those cops were acquitted. And everything went back to business as usual. And so I'm not sure, because I think for too many white people in America, they feel that Derek Chauvin is an outlier, that that could never be me. And yet, in fact, as Dr. Taylor said, he was aided and abetted by three police officers. Their responsibility is to protect human life. And yet they watched their partner. Nobody decided to step in and say, come on, Derek, let me talk to you for a moment. We'll hold him down, whatever. And yet you contrast that with Saturday night when I walked through Center City as the city was, you know, experiencing the first night of looting. And there are, you know, 20 cops around a Walgreens where the window had been broken to protect Walgreens. And I thought, you know, if the police had protected George Floyd, we wouldn't be here tonight.
Let me quote something that you wrote, Kianga. You had a big piece in the New York Times over the weekend, and you wrote the convergence of these tragic events, a pandemic disproportionately killing black people, the failure of the state to protect black people, and the preying on black people by police has confirmed what most of us already know. If we and those who stand with us do not mobilize in our own defense, then no official entity ever will. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've seen what has been shown by the pandemic as well is over the last several weeks is the kind of abject negligence, malfeasance, or complicity of the U.S. government at the highest level to be able to protect the lives of ordinary citizens. And that's not just African-Americans. You know, I think we've seen a number of young white people on these protests as well. Much of that is out of solidarity with the experiences of African-Americans, but it's also a statement about their own frustration and anger about the lack of security in their own lives, people who are drowning in debt, who can't find jobs that will ever help them pay off their debt, and, you know, most of whom have been reduced to working just to deal with debt. And so I think that when people feel like you do all the things that you're supposed to do, everyone said, oh, vote, vote. Voting is how you will change this. Well, people have been voting for quite a long time. And these types of situations have not changed. And so when you feel like the official mechanisms that we are told to use to change these conditions don't actually work, then people will take their futures, their livelihoods, their lives into their own hands. And that is part of what the dynamic that we are seeing right now. What wing of government can you go to stop police brutality? What wing of government can you go to get health care when it's not readily available? What wing of the government can you go to get a job that a meaningful job that will actually secure a future for you? There are none. And so this is what we are seeing, is that people have become fed up and are rebelling against these conditions that have been imposed upon them.
Mark Kelly Taylor, we're almost up on a break here. Can you just do a quick reaction to what Kianga Yamada Taylor was just saying?
Yeah, so I can't disagree with it. I mean, it is absolutely right that people are, and let's just talk about Philadelphia, where I've spent, you know, the last 12 years as a pastor. And with our work, we've worked heavily trying to raise wages for, you know, the poorest folk in this city, and met with stiff resistance from elected officials and business leaders who tell us we can't afford it. We have said repeatedly to them that you can't afford not to do this, that there are swaths of this community that have been left out of this economy. And at some point, the people that you push away are going to come and tear this beautiful center city up. I mean, we have what we witnessed Saturday night. Mm-hmm. It's not like people have not said that wasn't going to happen. You can call the gallery whatever you want to call it, the fashion center. You can put brand new paint on it, new tile floors. But if you don't address the inequity that is baked into these neighborhoods, then what happened this weekend is going to continue to happen because, again, people don't feel that they have a hope.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is
supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Dr. Kianga Yamada Taylor. She's an assistant professor of African American Studies at Princeton University. She's got a new book. It's called Race for Profit: How Banks and the Real Estate Industry Undermine Black Ownership. Also with us, Pastor Mark Kelly Taylor, pastor of Mother Bethel AME Church here in Philadelphia. And he's an organizer with POWER, which stands for Philadelphians Organized to Witness, Empower, and Rebuild. We are talking about the demonstrations of the last week or so, the police response. We're talking about the death of George Floyd, the fact that one police officer has been charged with his murder, third-degree murder charges. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. I want to quote something from Martin Luther King. This was actually a speech he gave in Philadelphia in 1967, so decades ago, where he said, "America has failed to hear the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met, and it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so, in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again." Kianga, those are really prophetic words coming from Martin Luther King.
Yeah, I think that what we are seeing is the kind of cumulative failures of this country to seriously respond to Black grievances. And so, you know, I think that this is not just a replay of this kind of violence from earlier periods, that this is really a cumulative effect of really ignoring or dealing systemically with the issues that, you know, with the issues that are driving this kind of rage. I mean, you have to question, for the richest country in the history of the world, why can't we solve this issue of poverty? Why can't we solve these issues of inequality? Why do we still have classrooms, schools, when, you know, we're in the midst of a pandemic, debating how to go back to school for tens of thousands of kids in the fall? And many of these schools, they don't have soap. They don't have hot water. How can that be? How can that be? There are hundreds of apartments and houses in the city of Philadelphia that have been legally designated unfit for human habitation, and yet hundreds of families live in these dwellings. How can this be? And so, you know, we have elected officials wringing their hands on television, talking about how horrible this is, and yet none of them appear to be prepared to do a single thing about it. And so until those who have power and authority stop looking at this as curious bystanders, as, you know, interested citizens, and start looking at it as people who are in positions of power and authority, who wield great influence, have control over budgets, and thus have the power to create policies and follow through with them to fundamentally change people's lives, then we should not expect a different set of results. That was the case at the end of the 1960s. That was the case in 1992 in the aftermath of the LA rebellion. It was the case in 2014 in the aftermath of the Ferguson uprising. And so it's not good enough to talk about how horrible these things are when those who have power and authority fail to act to change the situation.
Pastor Kelly, excuse me, Pastor Tyler, let me ask you, though, and obviously the police are really at the center of so much of what we're talking about, what is happening. How do you suggest, even using Philadelphia as an example, and clearly there are largely peaceful protests, but as we know, stores have gotten looted, there have been violence, things set afire. How do you suggest the police, I guess, differentiate between peaceful protesters and those intent on violence?
Well, I mean, listen, the police are, I mean, they're basically a tool of those who are in power, and they'll do what they're allowed to do. And, you know, Philadelphia police, it's an interesting breed. Yesterday, there was a peaceful protest. 1,000 people walked out onto 676, took over the freeway. This is kind of what people do these days, right? They've got traffic stopped, and all of a sudden, and I've seen the video, and I've actually spoken to a pastor who is very well respected in the community, who happened to be shadowing the crowd, just watching them. He was enjoying it. He said it was, you know, it was a great, you know, protest. He wasn't really a part of it. He followed them out there, and he's videotaping it. And, you know, the police just walk out with the big tear gas canister. So while we're talking about the president did in D.C., which was appalling last night, this is what Philadelphia police did yesterday, unprovoked. Now, they released a statement today saying that they had rocks thrown at them, that there was a Ohio patrolman who was in a car, whose car was being shaken, and they were fearing for his life. I've not, of all the video footage that I've seen, I've not seen any of that. If that's the case, they should release it. But what I have seen is the way in which they callously just started tear gassing people. I was on 52nd and Chestnut Sunday night with other clergy, with protesters, just watching to make sure everything was fine. Tear gas canisters flew at us over a building. They were shooting them into the neighborhood from a tank, and they couldn't even see where they were landing. People were having birthday parties for their children on their stoop who had nothing to do with the protest. And so the ways in which they just are callous, they do not care, they would have never done that in Chestnut Hill. They would have never done it where my church sits, in Society Hill. But they do it in West Philly, in North Philly, and where I grew up in East Oakland, because they can get away with it. And until we, you know, as a society say you can no longer get away with it, they'll continue to do so.
Dr. Yamada Taylor, I was reading about actually the Camden police chief who walked with protesters, and we've seen incidents of police kneeling in solidarity with the protesters. How do you see, I guess, the police and their perhaps inability to differentiate between those who were there for peaceful reasons and, frankly, those who were there to cause trouble?
Well, I think I'd probably reject the effort to cleave protesters into different camps. I think that, I think that there are people who have reached a point where they are expressing their anger and frustration in some cases, and in other cases, we have the police who are acting as provocateurs and who are instigating violence. And so I think that the efforts to divide protesters into camps of good protesters or bad protesters really is an effort to get away from the central discussion, which is why are the police so racist, so brutal over such a long period of time? We often hear public officials talk about the need to rebuild relationships between police and the communities that they patrol. And it's a misleading statement because as someone who has studied this, my first book is called From Black Lives Matter to Black Liberation. And in that book, I describe how there has never been a golden age of policing in the United States, that from the moment that African Americans were free and began to migrate out of rural areas into urban areas at the turn of the 20th century, they have been overly surveilled, beaten, and abused by police. If you go back and look at newspaper accounts in Detroit and Philadelphia in the 1920s, you will find it replete with accounts of police abuse and violence. The same in the 1950s when a commission was established, when there was a delegation of Americans who went to the United Nations to charge American police with genocide. They had a petition called We Charge Genocide in 1951. We had the riots in the 1960s in the Kerner Commission that found that police brutality was the thread that connected more than 250 urban uprisings from 1963 to 1968. We had the same findings in 1992 after the Los Angeles riots, and certainly in the aftermath of Ferguson and then the uprising in Baltimore. So far from being new, that this is an established pattern. And that, to me, is what the focal point of the discussion about what is happening now should be on.
And that's Dr. Kianga Yamada-Taylor, also with us, Pastor Mark Kelly Tyler. We are talking about the protests, the uprising, the death in Minneapolis, the politics involved, the response from law enforcement, from mayors, from the President of the United States. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Pastor Tyler, Mike from Germantown says, quote, any good that was going to come from protests is now gone with all the looting and violence. What do you say to that?
Listen, I mean, let's not overreact. We are in the middle of COVID-19, right? This is an unprecedented pandemic. People have been sheltered in place. Many people have lost their jobs, and there's no turning back for some people. And so you're talking about a situation where you start with the poorest big city in America, the poorest, 26% poverty rate. And when you take those jobs away from people who are already only getting by with $7.25 an hour, and folk who are working in the hospitality industry, there are no hotels now that need you. You know, folk are not flying in and out of the city like they were. So those good airport jobs, good, quote unquote, you know, $12 an hour now, thanks to a lot of hard organizing work. But a lot of those jobs are gone. And so these are the children of folk who cannot afford to barely keep a roof over their head. And so why is anyone surprised? I think we need to talk about the systemic, you know, root causes that have created these conditions to begin with. If you don't want looting, then take care of the community. Now, we say we don't have money for this, and yet a month ago we needed a stimulus bill. We had to put money in Americans' pockets, and poof, we got a stimulus bill, trillions of dollars. We're about to have a second bill. Now, Mitch McConnell doesn't want it, but with all of this that's going on, they're going to have to sign it and put more money. But do you really think that a person who lives in deep poverty in Philadelphia with a $1,200 stimulus check, let's be generous, two kids, another $1,000, $2,400 is going to help them make it for 4 to 6 months of uncertainty? What do you think their children are going to do if given that opportunity? It's just, it's ridiculous to me. And I, so, again, I just push back on that. And I think instead of blaming looters, let's blame the system that has created this.
Here's Jennifer from Plymouth Meeting, and she asks, as a white suburban woman, I completely support the protests, and I want to know what I can do. And apparently we've gotten several callers who have the same question, which is, how do we be an ally? Can you take that, Kianga Yamada-Taylor?
Sure. Two things immediately come to mind. One is that there are a number of bail funds that are being organized in Philadelphia. You can Google them. And these are basically organizations you can donate to help bail people out of jail. The idea of putting people in jails right now, jails are concentrated hotspots of COVID-19, is insane. And so, you know, we need to get people who are being arrested for demonstrating or for, you know, breaking this arbitrary curfew out of jail. The other thing is to get politically involved. You know, we are coming up upon election season. You know, there are going to be decisions being made about budgets and where money should be directed. And this is something that, you know, people need to make their voices heard. And so in the city of Philadelphia, when we once again get presented a budget that calls for increasing the police budget while cutting public schools, while cutting public hospitals, we have to reject that. And so we need people to use their voices, to meet with their friends and their family, and to put pressure on these elected officials to don't just talk about how sorry you are about what is happening, but we need to create the kinds of pressure to make them govern in ways that actually reflect the will of the people of this city and state.
Well, and it is primary election day today in Pennsylvania. Pastor Tyler, let me just follow up on something that was mentioned earlier, and the president calling essentially for the kind of militarization of the response to some of these protests. Here's a quote from Defense Secretary Esper saying, I think the sooner that you mass and dominate the battle space, the quicker this dissipates and we can get back to the right normal. We need to dominate the battle space. What is your response to those very inflammatory words?
Sure. Well, he's parroting the president. I had a chance to actually watch the news this morning, something that I've not done over the last few days. It's just, you know, I've had too much, but I'm glad I took time this morning to really watch that story unfold. And so the attorney general is also parroting that, you know, they want to pick up the president's main word for the day. So his word for the day was dominate. You know, he said, I think, like four times in a couple of sentences. And so this idea that somehow, you know, the I think the coded message is put black people back in their place, which is that white people dominate. You know, the president, it was striking yesterday as he walks across after he had basically mowed people over who were peacefully protesting in front of a church. I mean, you can do a whole show on that, you know, him using the church and a Bible as a prop. But it's striking to me that there are no black people in his circle, in his inner circle. In 2020, you're the president of the United States. You don't have one person of color, no black person, no one. And now I understand they're going to run and get, you know, Ben Carson, Dr. Carson to come in and help. I'm not sure what he's supposed to do. But so it's deeply, it reinforces everything that we think about him to begin with, that we want to go back to happier days, you know, when America was great and black folk were seen and not heard. But that genie is not going back in the bottle.
Well, here's a quote from the Episcopal Bishop of D.C., Marianne Budd, who said about what the president did. The president did not come to pray. He did not lament the death of George Floyd or acknowledge the collective agony of people of color in our nation. He did not attempt to heal or bring calm to our troubled land. Kianga, we are almost up on a break here, but just a quick response, if you don't mind.
Well, I think that, you know, Trump has been a thug and white supremacist in the White House for a long time. And so periodically we are reminded of this viscerally, and this is just an extension of that. And so, it's good for people to recognize that and call it out when they when they see it. And I think, you know, it's also demonstrative of the fact that he has no answers. He has no credible solution. And like those, you know, most who are prone to dictatorial outbursts will resort to violence to impose his will. But I think the protesters have shown that they will not easily be intimidated.
Well, let's pick up on that after this very short break. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia, and we will be right back. This is Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with our guests about the last week of protests and unrest, what it says about a history of police violence and racism here in the United States, talking with Dr. Kianga Yamada-Taylor, again, Assistant Professor of African American Studies at Princeton University, and Pastor Mark Kelly Tyler. He's pastor of Mother Bethel AME Church, which is in Philadelphia. He's also an organizer with Power, Philadelphians Organized to Witness, Empower, and Rebuild. And again, you can join us, Radio Times, at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. In fact, we have a caller, Allison, on line one. Allison calling us from Mount Airy. And Allison, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say I was at the demonstration yesterday as well, near 22nd and the Parkway. And I can, again, not that it's necessary, but confirm that everything that the pastor said is absolutely true. It's very clear to me that the police are there and the security forces, quote unquote, are there to A, provoke violence, and B, do harm. I also want to say, as you know, a 57-year-old white woman living in Mount Airy, I came home and heard my neighbors. I live in a row home, so I can hear backyard conversations. you know, making jokes about the quote unquote vandalism and looting, mm-hmm. but never once heard them utter a word about George Floyd or what exactly this is all about. So I would urge my fellow white people to think about what is really going on, what our role is in it, and perpetrating it, and to think what our responsibility is to deal with this. And
absolutely.
Thank you both very much.
Well, Allison, thank you for calling into Radio Times. Kianga Yamada Taylor, let me just pick up on what she said. And are you worried? We haven't spent a lot of time talking about George Floyd in this conversation, that he has gotten lost in the last week.
Well, I don't think that Floyd has gotten lost for, you know, people who are on the streets and for people who are concerned about this. But I think that, you know, most people understand that this is larger than a single individual. And I think that even looking at the life of George Floyd, a black man who had suffered from mass incarceration, who had suffered from a lack of opportunity, who one may ponder, you know, was a security guard who is alleged to have passed a fake $20 bill after, you know, weeks of being out of work because the restaurant he worked in was closed, who had just spent, you know, a chunk of his money on rent. And so in many ways, I think it'd be a disservice to Floyd's memory to be myopically focused on the question of police when his life and the fact that so many people have poured into the street shows that this involves many overlapping and interconnected issues. And we have a responsibility to not narrowly focus on policing alone, but understand how it works with these other manifestations of exploitation and oppression in our society.
Pastor Tyler, as you both are saying, you know, we have been here before, and the question is, are we going to do something to become a better and different country? What would be a sign of that for you?
Well, I think that we have to re-examine the word looting. Right. I mean, everybody can see that it's looting when you're going into a Foot Locker and stealing a bunch of sneakers and running off with them and the empty boxes are on the street. But we should also expand that definition to understand how we loot, you know, the public fund. I mean, you know, tax money is public money, and how we redistribute that wealth and we extract, you know, money from Philadelphia so that Philadelphia schools are chronically underfunded from the on the state budget side. That is violent looting, and you take it and you put it into other, you know, districts, how we, you know, prevent, you know, mostly black and brown women from organizing unions in hotels, and so they are the most underpaid, you know, persons, and yet in other cities those are good union jobs, moves them into the middle class, and allows them to take care of their children in a way that they could not before. So let's not just look at what the police are doing. And again, I agree with Dr. Taylor that this is all connected, and that if you only speak about the police, it's easy for the average white American to get away with it. Like, hey, but we need to all examine the cost of our comfort. You know, why is it that the meal only costs this much at the hotel versus the true cost? Because the true cost is being, you know, borne by someone else. And so I think those are the kind of things I would encourage people to do. You can always go to powerinterfaith.org. We're in 13 counties now in Pennsylvania. You can learn more about what we're doing. We're happy to introduce you to other organizers and many allies that we work with. But, I mean, you have to start somewhere and take your head out of the ground.
Dr. Yamada Taylor, though, I mean, as you both have said, this is a critical juncture in our history. Do you have any sense of optimism or sense that we can do things better and differently in this country? Or in a year's time, is it going to be business as usual? The old normal, not the new normal.
So I think for me, the optimism comes from the fact that people are in the streets demanding that things be different. And so that is a source of hope, and not, you know, this kind of cheap hope, but the desire of people for things to be different. But what I also know is that it's very easy for elected officials to express concern and to express sympathy and to say that they empathize with people who are suffering these conditions. And it's also very easy for them to do nothing about it. And we've seen a shot of that, a picture of that, with the COVID crisis. In early April, everyone had a press conference, got on television, and talked about how awful the disparities in the COVID deaths that were disproportionately impacting Black communities were. And yet, what has changed in terms of dealing with the underlying conditions that create those disparities? Nothing. Very shortly afterwards, elected officials also talked about the need for deep, dramatic budget cuts. So both can't be true. You can't both be for having things be fundamentally different and continue to govern in the same old way. And so the hope lies, therefore, not with elected officials in and of themselves. It lies with the development of a movement of organizations that have the capacity and ability to put pressure in such ways to force a change around these specific issues, but also to raise bigger questions about how we organize our lives in this society more generally.
Pastor Tyler, here's a comment from Veronica, and she says, my friend yesterday was inconsolable. She's the mother of three Black men and one grandson. Her frustration was expressed to me this way, quote, oh, yes, white people have been sympathetic since lynchings. They stand there and watch the Black man hang, shake their heads and pray, and then go back to their lives of relative safety. She is tired. And then Veronica says, so am I. Can you speak to that?
Well, I mean, I join them. I'm tired of it as well. And I think that one of the things we have to start doing is we have to reexamine the assumption that law enforcement gets an automatic pass. In my profession as a pastor, we don't get a pass anymore, you know, and deservedly so, you know. So, you know, persons who've come before me have, you know, burned bridges. And so people look at you with suspicion until you prove to them that you are who you are. And I think we have to do the same with law enforcement. Let me give you an example. Right now in the city of Philadelphia, the mayor's presented a budget. And in the budget, it calls for cuts across the board, including, you know, very valuable resources to summer programs and things of that nature. And yet, guess who gets an increase? The only increase that I've seen, there may be another, but $14 million new dollars for the police department, in addition to the fact that they've given them a 2.5% raise without even renegotiating their contract. $14 million to do new cool things inside their building with technology. The cops don't deserve that kind of just, you know, that kind of gratis where you just get things without any scrutiny. You have to prove to us that you deserve that, that it's warranted, that there is a reason, and that it's going to make the community safer as a result. We have to stop. We have to push back and stop giving them everything that they want.
Dr. Yamada Taylor, here's an email from Paul. He says, so you just let the burning and rioting go, and what happens afterwards? And the privileged white kids coming into town to rage and loot. Trump isn't doing a great job. Are local leaders doing anything good? That's from Paul. What do you say?
I think the idea of privileged white kids coming in from out of town. It's always shocking to me the quickness with which people are so willing to absorb some unfounded nonsense and accept it as the truth. And I think that that is actually part of the problem here, because I also believe that if we only see this as an issue of race and the police, which is obviously central to this situation that we're seeing, that we miss the brokenness, the fundamental brokenness of our society right now. For ordinary white men and women, their life expectancy has gone into reverse. People understand that that is something that does not happen in the developed world. Life expectancy does not go into reverse. And why is that happening? Because of alcoholism, opioid addiction, and suicide.
Yeah.
And why are those things happening? Because we live in a country where people have no future. And so that is what this rebellion is about. It is about racism and inequality, and it is about millions of white people in America who also do not have a future. And so you can be fixated on looting, but until you deal with that, the utter hopelessness in a country as rich as this one, which is willing to send rockets into space for the Space Force, while people are unemployed, are hungry, and are faced with addiction, that is why people are in the streets right now.
Those are called deaths of despair, and you know, it's a shocking thing that is happening in this country. Pastor Tyler, let me just throw something else in. It's a little bit out of left field, but it's something I wanted to ask you. And I'm thinking of the armed protesters who went to the Capitol. I believe it was in Michigan. Now, they didn't shoot off their ARs, but nonetheless, they were standing there with ARs. And obviously, in a threatening manner, no one wants to be in a building with someone with an AR. Can you speak to that and just, the response of that and the response to what we've been talking about?
Well, it's the ultimate expression of white privilege, is it not? I mean, if, you know, I was born in 1966 in Oakland, so I was born like a month or so before the Black Panther Party was actually started. And, you know, so those kind of images have always been a part of my, you know, kind of understanding, you know, the Black Panther Party showing up, following the police on stops, armed, and, you know, standing there with shotguns so the police could see them so they would make sure that nothing happened. And there's something about a black person with a gun that strikes fear in the hearts of law enforcement. And yet they see a white guy with an AR-15 with multiple clips, you know, a 9mm on the side, you know, a gun in the ankle. And it's just, that's just, you know, Jim being Jim. And so, but that goes back to everything else that we're talking about. And so you have, you know, white protesters who show up and nothing happens to them, though they are fully armed in the Capitol, threatening governors. And yet, protesters on 676 with picket signs, and they are sprayed, you know, they're gassed, and, you know, sprayed with tear gas. You can't make this stuff up. These images show you just how different people are treated in this country.
We're almost out of time here. Kianga Yamada-Taylor, a number of callers say, look, we support the cause, but not the violence. And it's something, actually, I think Martin Luther King said, essentially, to condemn the violence, but to also understand it. And I'm just giving you about a minute or so to respond, but it looks like that's where a lot of callers are, that's where they're at this moment.
I would suggest to the callers to stay focused on the issue at hand. Martin Luther King also said that the U.S. government was the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, and that he actually wouldn't speak out against people who engaged riots any longer until the United States stopped its campaign of carnage at that time in Vietnam, but also elsewhere in the world. And so for me, the point is that we not be distracted, but to stay focused on the issues that have driven people into the streets in the midst of a deadly pandemic that is disproportionately killing black and brown people. How bad must things be in this country for people to respond to that? And that to me is what we should be focused on right now.
Well, we could go on. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Dr. Kianga Yamada-Taylor, thank you for joining us once again on Radio Times.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Assistant Professor of African American Studies at Princeton University, again, author of a new book called Race for Profit, How Banks and the Real Estate Industry Undermine Black Home Ownership. Pastor Mark Kelly Tyler, thank you for joining us on Radio Times once again.
Always a pleasure.
And he is pastor of Mother Bethel AME Church in Philadelphia, and again, organizer with POWER. And again, POWER stands for Philadelphians Organized to Witness, Empower, and Rebuild. We appreciate all your calls and comments to the show. This is a topic we will continue to discuss on Radio Times, certainly this week and probably well into the future. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Henson. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.